Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my channel again. We are on day 12, methinks, of the Ukrainian invasion of Russia. Well, I baptized it invasion, probably misnomer, incursion, because Kyiv itself says it does not intend to hold on to this territory long term. Obviously, the tacit message is that they will trade it in return for Russia returning Ukraine its sovereign territory. Trouble is, of course, Russia seized Crimea in 2014, staged that referendum, incorporated in the Russian Federation, likewise annexed four more regions in 2022, and the Russian constitution forbids Russia ever ceding a single millimeter of its territories. It's a bit difficult for Putin to back down from that one. Anyway, so how come the Russians can't push them out? The Russian army outnumbers the Ukrainian army almost 4-1. So the Russian army has really underperformed. It's really been dismal. It's made me reflect, the one sector in which Russia has actually exceeded expectations is economically. I thought that sanctions would have a greater impact, and yet the Russian economy continues to grow, supposedly 3% last year, probably an exaggeration, maybe 1%, but I don't think anyone doubts it did actually grow. And if it weren't for sanctions, where would they be? They wouldn't be at 1% economic growth. They'd be 5%, something like that. But it looks like they may be heading for the precipice next year because of all this overspending, all this inflation they can't keep down, having to give the interest rates very, very high, eventually come down with a bump. And then they're faced with the stark choice. Is this war worth fighting? And is it affordable? Because despite what Putin pretends, this is not an existential war. And it is not an imposed war. But so Russia, partly, they can't drive the Ukrainians out because they don't have the troops, really, because they've committed almost everything to Ukraine. Putin claimed to have 600,000 troops over there. Thought that's probably an exaggeration by 100,000 or even 200,000. Remember, it's the vastest land area in the world, Russia. It's 80 million square kilometers. They've got many other frontiers to guard, even if very thinly. Plus, Moscow is very heavily guarded. Now, remember, he's got overlapping agencies with different over the overlapping areas of responsibility. His praetorians realizing that dictators often overthrown by the army. So the army and the Rosgvardia, as well as the FSB, that's internal intelligence with its armed units. I can't think who else. Ministry of the Interior troops. Who will spy upon the spies? Some sort of inter-service rivalry. And then there's the Federal Protective Service and so on, so that nobody could really could overthrow him. The army itself, not too close to the center of Moscow. Everybody else, not the army. But there's no general who's come out of this with, a gleam on his medals. It's not like there's a Zhukov figure as in the Second World War. So probably no one who's had a lot of prestige accrued to him who could overthrow Putin. The one person who seemed to emerge with quite a lot of credit from 2022 was Soravikin. Soravikin, of course, who disappeared into the ether after the failed coup last June, but is alive. We know that much. So he doesn't have the troops, Putin, and obviously not well-trained troops. Border guards, conscripts who are still wet behind the ears from basic training. And those was the opposition that Ukraine's crack troops are facing, which is why some of them ran up the white flag at the first, whiff of cordite. I'm not surprised. Okay, I've never been anywhere near a battle, and I'd probably brick myself if I did. So they were no match for these battle-hardened Ukrainian veterans. Plus, the Ukrainians have got better equipment, and there was surprise. They shouldn't have been surprised, because you can't disguise this military buildup. The Russian satellites and drones will have seen it, fed up the chain command who just poo-pooed it. So this myopia. So exploiting the way that Russia's over-centralized, that they won't delegate, that even very simple decisions are relayed several stages up the chain of command. It takes a very long time for the information to get up to where it is a decision to be made and that to be passed down the chain of command. So they just don't react very quickly. And that's why they have not yet to formulate a plan. Putin was having a meeting with the Security Council saying, we'll take technical measures, talking about technology. I mean, you can't really wait for technology. Send the troops now. And Putin is unwilling to do the obvious thing, which is to withdraw troops from Ukraine. He doesn't want to slacken the tempo of the attacks in Donetsk and elsewhere. He feels that time is on his side, that just but this relentlessness will eventually pay off. And it is paying dividends because they're moving forward all the time, increasing pressure on Pokrovsk. So he wants no let up on that one. So he'd have to withdraw tens of thousands of troops to contain this. He's thought the Ukrainians have got at least 6,000 troops in that Suzhda district of Kursk region. Are they going to go to Belgorod region? Possibly. In a way, I'm surprised the Ukrainians haven't moved even further. I wouldn't penetrate deeper into Russia. I thought I'd move further east if I were them to threaten the city of Belgorod, obviously go north of it, cut off the roads and railway lines to Belgorod, and then spook the Russians into withdrawing from there and threaten the Russian positions around Kharkiv because they won't be able to get the munitions, fuel, and everything else. And I thought the Ukrainians, I thought they'd just commandeer Russian civilian cars or for rations, just go to supermarkets. That's what Russian troops did in Ukrainian occupied villages. Well, occupied villages in Ukraine. And the Ukrainians have blown up quite a major bridge. So they don't have the troops and don't have the sort of the flexibility because they're doctrinally very rigid that will just respond to the situation and someone quite far down the chain of command, use your initiative. You're given an order. You might not even might have to sort of occasionally disobey that order, not out of any disloyalty or insubordination, but just as a better way to do it. And this person higher up doesn't know, doesn't have time to think about this. Or sometimes obey a command, but not in the way that you were told to do it, so long as it achieves the right result. So exploit the way that the Russians are too disciplinarian. They're such martinets. There's this rigidity, this closed-mindedness, and this distrust of initiative. So they're just not, what would the word be, lithe, I suppose, the Russian army, as well as lacking the troops and the equipment and so on. So, and Putin is just hell-bent on taking that those Ukrainian positions, which at this rate, Pokrovsky probably would in a couple of weeks. But if he doesn't, then he's going to lose more of his own territory. But I don't think Ukraine can hold this territory because pretty soon they'd have to dig in, the trench warfare, they're back to square one. I think, have the Ukrainians possibly made a big mistake by then inviting lots of Russian troops to that sector, Suzhda, to then go over the very north east corner of Ukraine, Sumy, which is up until now hasn't seen any fighting in sort of over 2 years. And the Ukrainians wouldn't be able to defend there again, that the front line would be even longer. I mean, I know the Russians would be stretched thin as well. The thing is, for Ukraine to go after Putin's air force, he doesn't care about the lives of his men, but he does care about his precious planes. These cost several million dollars a pop at least, and he cares about his navy. The reason he likes the navy so much, because his father was in the Soviet Navy briefly. The planes, he thinks he can't replace those. So really try and hit those air bases, force them further back, more the sort of cordon sanitaire, force the Russian artillery back out of range of Kharkiv and so on. So they have been audacious. I thought they could have been even bolder, but you know, that could be a bit disaster if they're cut off and enveloped and things like that. They could withdraw. They could bring in border guards from elsewhere. They're not really trained to fight. Something, at least numbers, bodies, even fairly untrained bodies, are better than anything else, at least to be in the way, prevent the Ukrainians advancing. And some of the people who are guarding Moscow who don't really need to be guarding it, there's really no threat. But obviously, they are not to protect the population of Moscow, all these military units, they're to oppress the population of Moscow. They're to protect the regime from the Russian people. And just, it reminds me how risible Putin's aims were, to demilitarize Ukraine. It is more militarized than ever. Look, it's chased the Russian army back into Russia. And denazify it. Well, obviously, Putin's turned his country into a Nazi state, and Ukraine never was. So anyway, I would say about this incursion, long may it continue. I wish there were peace right now, and the war never happened. So I regret every death. Most Russians aren't bad people. Most Russian soldiers aren't bad people. There'll be some bad people on the Ukrainian side. And obviously, war can bring out the worst in people. Imagine the person that you love most in the world was killed. Imagine that. The death of a loved one is a very, very heavy blow. And I presume it must be much harder to take if it wasn't natural, accidental. It was deliberate, even if someone was fighting legally. You might think it's an unjust cause. You might be right. Maybe it was an unjust cause the enemy had. But nevertheless, one soldier who kills another soldier, or even accidentally kills a civilian when fighting lawfully, is not an evil person or a criminal, but obviously hate blinds people. People are just enraged and they wish to inflict the pain they have suffered on the other side. And often they can't find the individual. They wouldn't know who the individual was who killed their loved one. And even if they could, the one who killed my loved one, he, she might have been killed subsequently in the war. I don't know which side. I can't get that individual, but I can get the side back. And I suppose that's how people started thinking, this my side bias, downplaying or denying wrongdoing by one's own side, upplaying or inventing wrongdoing by the other side, and so forth. So peace now. And it's all the fault of the Putin regime. Anyway, thank you so much for watching my channel. Hello there, Simple Lady 17. And what are these symbols? Oh, hearts. Well, obviously you want to write to my special channel, my special email, gcallahan@gmail.com, the email address of this channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Toodaloo.